part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Giving me a pain in the ass runaround to sign into
Skype. I'm sure Skype is wonderful. Although, I mean, it's free, people, and you can have as many people on the call as you want, and you can talk for as long as you want. So I don't know why Zoom is the thing that's taken off, but I love Skype, and it was developed by people in Estonia, which is where my part of my family is from. So there you go. This podcast is not sponsored by Skype. I just use it a lot. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Good.
I'm
everything
glad you,
good.
Dug the movie. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I liked it. I liked it. I liked it. I liked it very much. I mean, I was blown away. Should we just start chatting about it? Should we just jump into it?
Yeah. Why not?
Cool. All right. Well, let's just start off by saying that this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. And this is one of our Halloween horror movie episodes. We are recording early, and this year I've actually invited special guests, people that have been on the podcast before, creators, to pick their own films. And for this week's film, I have creator, writer Phil Mucci on the line, and you were on the podcast to talk about the, I'm going to mispronounce it, Diabolik double feature, right?
Yeah.
That is your book.
Professor Dario Bava and Gringo Loco.
Yeah, because I always go, for some reason, I always want to pronounce it Diabolik double feature, but it's Diabolik, right?
That's how we pronounce that spelling, yes.
Okay. No, sounds good. No, I mean, we had a really great time. And if you get a chance, go to parttimefanboy.com and listen to that episode. Phil was great to talk to. And it turns out we both like horror movies, of course, because his book is based on, you know, Diabolik double feature. I mean, what else could you take from that? So I invited Phil to come onto the podcast and recommend a movie, and he did. And would you like to tell the people what movie you recommended?
Sure. It's an Argentinian horror flick called Aterrados.
Yes.
In Spanish, or Terrified in English.
Yes.
From I think it was originally 2017.
Uh-huh.
And I saw it around 2019.
Okay.
Or so. Because I'd read about it from film festivals, and it sounded really fascinating.
Yeah.
And I've watched it several times since the first time, because it's a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
And super creepy. So, that was my recommendation. You're not the first person I recommended it to either. I've recommended it to friends, and I was like, you got to check this movie out.
Well, I can imagine, because
this movie.
When I sent you an email, you were like, I know exactly what I want. Like, you didn't even like hesitate. Like, I got an email back and I was like, oh, this is great. He's into it. Like, I love this. But I mean, before we jump into the movie, let's talk about like your book first, because I mean, I'm being rude. I mean, I told people a little bit about what it was about, but what is the Diabolik double feature? I know I'm like reversing gears. I'm shifting gears, and I apologize to the listeners out there, but I want, you know, to give your due about what you're about. So tell the people about that first.
Well, our first Diabolik double feature came out this year in May, and it's a flip book, double issue. One side is Professor Dario Bava, Orgy of the Blood Freaks.
Love it.
A sexy European horror romp.
Nice.
And the other side is Gringo Loco, Dead Late and a Dollar Short, which is a supernatural spaghetti western.
Yes.
Very much like a drive-in movie double feature in comic book form.
Nice.
And both very horror influenced, and both very pulpy genre stuff that, you know, comes from my love of cinema, pretty much.
Nice.
And, you know, It's interesting too, because it's both books are kind of, you know, based on foreign horror films, not so much American horror films. And the movie I recommended to you is a foreign horror film.
Yes.
It's in Spanish. It's subtitled. They were actually going to, Guillermo del Toro was going to remake it with the same director.
Oh, really?
In English language version.
No.
Yeah, as of like 2018, but there's nothing about it anymore. I think COVID kind of scuttled that, you know, project, like
not
so many
others. Not necessary. Just release it. Give it a wide release in this form, because I loved it. I mean, I could just say that I loved it, and I'm so glad that you recommended it to me. But where can people find the Diabolic Double Feature? Like, what's your URL and
course.
Stuff?
Yes, my plug.
Yeah. Let's not forget that.
DarioBava.com. ProfessorDarioBava.com is nice. Our website. And you can get everything there and find out more information. And we have a great video page, too, with some animation and some teasers. And you can learn all about both books and the double issue and what we got coming up. We got the next issue is in production now. And nice. we're going to preview the new cover art by Robert Samelin at Son of Monster Palooza. In mid-October.
So you're gonna be at Son of Monster. Oh, that's awesome. That's terrific. So by the time this will probably air before that, hopefully. So these are gonna air in October. We are recording in early September, because I like to do these early in case there's some weird references that you're like, wow, what are they talking about? That was a while ago. In case that pops up. But I like to be prepared, because if I wait till October to do this, like, literally my October month is just hell. I've got a kid, Halloween, blah, blah, blah. I love all that stuff. And then I'm just running around with, so I learned to start like literally recording these like during the summer. And people are like, really? We have to do this now? And I'm like, yes, we have to do it now. So as of right now, it is September, early September. And I'm just going to say that the Diabolic Double Feature gets the Part-Time Fanboy stamp of approval. And you can, and I just looked it up. It's episode 402 on our website, parttimefanboy.com. So listen to that interview. That's entertaining. But I also just really, really enjoyed the book when you sent it to me. So I'm happy to have you back on. You can come back anytime. But let's talk about your movie, Aterrados, which I very much loved. Do you want to try and explain it? It's hard to explain, right?
It is a little bit hard to explain. And the first time I saw it, I was just like, what the hell was that? You know,
in a good way, right?
It just throws you into like this kind of world, which is very much our own world, but it's a mundane sort of suburban Buenos Aires, sort of neighborhood. It's not that different from like Southern California, really. And parts of LA. And where horribly terrifying things just start happening. It's like the locus of a supernatural plague that just starts affecting people and attacking people in this neighborhood, right close to each other. Like three houses, I think, is the locus of the entire film. In some ways, it's like Poltergeist or like, Conjuring movie type thing where, these everyday people are subjected to this horrible supernatural force that's, you know, messing with everybody. And in the case of this film, literally like killing people and disappearing people and bringing them back from the dead and all kinds
so
of crazy.
So
just
crazy.
Starts happening. After it's a very weirdly structured movie, but basically it settles into three sort of, you know, older paranormal investigators and a cop brings them into this situation to, you know, help explain what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
And it ends well for no one.
No, it does not. It does
and
not end well.
And I'm including the audience in that too, because the movie is, I think what's remarkable about it is how little it actually explains about anything.
Yeah.
In terms of like the structure of supernatural horror in more American or British type films, these types of films are usually treated like a ghost story or a supernatural story is kind of a mystery. You know, like we have to find out, we get introduced to the characters, we care about them, and then we find out why this horrible haunting is happening and, you know, what is the mystery?
Yeah, yeah.
In Poltergeist, oh my God, we put the suburb on top of an ancient Indian burial ground. You know, like that's the big reveal. This movie, not interested at all in any of that. We're not gonna be told or learn anything, which I think is the weird thing the first time you watch it. That's why the first time I think you watch it, you're kind of like, what the hell? Because it sort of just ends in a way that's very unsatisfying to that instinct where you want the answer. But that's what makes it so creepy and scary.
For me, it was like the ending, and not to jump too ahead of anything. And there is kind of like a weird kind of pseudo explanation for like what's going on, but they don't delve too much into it. Like there's nothing concrete, right? There's sort of like one person theorizes.
There's a couple of lines that people say
exactly
near the end that are their theories about what it is.
Yeah.
And those are scary lines too. They're very cosmic horror.
Yeah.
Like the one female investigator who's Albrecht, where she's like, you know, like kind of like microscopic organisms use water for a channel, and they use us.
Yeah.
They use human beings.
It's kind of Lovecraftian, right?
It is very Lovecraftian, especially her whole piece, which is kind of built as the climax, sort of like. Because the movie's structure is very strange, and you're introduced to two characters for the first like 30 minutes of the film, and then you never basically see them again till the end. And one guy you never see again, really, and it's that's what kind of throws you off at first, because there's a couple of time shifts back and forth at the beginning.
And then
as it gets into it, it's not just some simple haunting about like, oh, this kid died and this happened, because the weird stuff starts happening before this child's death that we see in the trailer. It's no spoiler there, although we're probably going to get spoilers.
Sure. Spoil a little bit, but don't.
Sort of impossible to spoil this movie, because I've watched it again and again, and I still get the same like creeped out and the jump scares from it, because it's not really about the characters or anything. It's about this atmosphere and this weird supernatural world where, like, you know, almost anything can sort of happen. And it's the lack of explanation makes you constantly on edge, I think.
Yeah.
And it makes the movie more rewatchable.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's interesting. No, I was going to say, because I mean, I keep saying that it's kind of like strange, but it's not a strange movie. Like you're saying, like the structure is weird, and the structure is kind of weird, but I don't want to put people off like that this is some weird, because like when I first approached a bunch of people, like I was thinking like who might come back with something that was just like, you know, like a gore fest or a weird or an odd movie, you know what I'm saying? And one of the people that I thought like, okay, I might get like a weird 70s piece that I never heard about was you. Like, I was like, what's he going to come back with? And you came back with this movie and you sent me the trailer, and I was like, done, like ready to go. Like I was like ready to go, you know, because I mean, we all like the, you know, giallo stuff and the, you know, the 70s zombie stuff, but I have a varying tolerance towards that sort of thing, where it depends on what mood I'm in, and I'm like, do I really want to watch like Zombie 2 again? Like, you know what I mean? Like I have a bit of impatience, but this was made in 2017, and I don't want to give it the short shrift that, because we're saying like the structure is odd, and but it's not weird, because it starts off like in a very kind of excellent mundane way, right?
Yeah, it throws you into like, you're in. What I like about it is like the structure might be a little bit odd if you're looking for your standard thing, but what's good about the structure is like it keeps you entertained and on the edge of your seat, because you are thrown into these. There's no, like, in a lot of American movies, there's like the very predictable, like, oh, we've got to see the whole family, and we've got to establish them at the breakfast table, and oh, now we care about them. Okay, here come the zombies. Okay, now we know who everybody is. This is just like horrible things are happening right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just keep happening to these people.
Yeah.
The first, it's like the first opening scene was like, is just a woman in her home hearing sounds in her sink.
Yeah.
And in her drain. And then she explains it to her husband and has some terrifying lines about what she's hearing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not plumbing. It's human voices I'm hearing.
Yeah.
He's like, what are they saying? And she's like, they say they're going to kill me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, that's like, you're 2 minutes in and you're on the,
and then it's like sick. Title card, boom, boom. Yeah. And you're just like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah,
the music is great in the movie.
Oh, yeah. It is. I mean, I have to say, like, I love, discovering, I mean, I love it when people recommend or discovering stuff like this, that is so off the, like, I never would have heard of it probably if you had not recommended it. But I mean, the thing that I love about this, and a big pet peeve of mine in the past several years is, you know, this kind of slow burn horror, you know what I mean? I don't hate like slow burn horror so much, just so long as you don't drag it out too long to the point of where I'm like, all right, let's get to the thing that we need to get, you know, and then by the end, by the time things happen, like this thing is great because, I mean, it starts off and like you said, there's that little, you know, incident of the woman hearing voices, but then something else happens and it's just, and it has to do with sort of like, it's that very typical thing if you've ever lived in an apartment or a condo or whatever, and the next door neighbor is making noise in the middle of the night and you've been woken up, and it's dealing with that. And it's just so great because, like, I don't even want to spoil the moment, but things just go badly, right? And it came out for me like completely unexpected because one character goes next door to deal with the noise, right? To talk to the neighbor unsuccessfully, and then comes back and the female character goes off to do something, and when he comes back you're sort of still like, oh, she's still doing that thing, like what's going on? And then from then it goes ape shit, and I was not expecting like what happened to happen,
right. And I think it's part of a developing, like, okay, we're seeing the tension in the household now.
Yeah.
The husband and the wife, and he's on edge, and it's like, no, you're into the horror, you don't even know it yet.
yeah and that the great thing that happens, like, it's great because, like, this sort of thing, like, just because in the beginning and because the trailer that I saw, and I tried not to watch too much of that clip that you sent me that happened to be on YouTube, I tried not to watch too much of it because the assumption with like this sort of thing is like it's lower budget, right? Like it's not going to have the ability to do things that maybe like a larger Hollywood or even a mid-level, like a Conjuring, like you said, which I'm not even crazy about those movies or the ones that I've seen. I haven't seen them all. I don't seek them out, but they're a little too glossy like horror for me. You know what I'm saying?
They are. That's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, I did not. So like, this was very much like for me, like The Ring, right? Like when the first thing happened, like the original Ring, I'm watching the original Ring and I'm sitting there and watching the movie and I'm like, okay, kind of creepy. And then when the thing happens that everyone by now knows what happens, you're just like, what the, because I, you know, it was very, to that point, there was no budget for this. You know what I'm saying? And this does that, but it happens in the beginning and you're just sort of like, oh, crap, right?
No, and it escalates right away. Like the next episode is like one of the most terrifying parts of the movie. And you're like 10 minutes in.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Oh my God, what the hell is going to happen now?
Yeah.
It takes like tropes that are universal too. It's like the monster under the bed or thing in the closet, you know, and it takes those and it runs with them in a very scary and unique sort of way that I thought was really, really well done. And that those scenes like don't lose any of their power. I've watched it, you know, several times at this point, and it's remarkable how well that works in the movie, because the more you watch it too, you kind of feel like you're getting to sort of know these characters more through their plight, because you know that, you know, nothing works out for anybody.
Yeah.
And once you realize like there are no answers, it becomes even kind of more terrifying to watch.
Yeah.
And I say that in a way that I mean as a total compliment, because some of my favorite kind of horror movies. I think the horror of the terror of the unknown is really effective.
Yeah.
And like what our imaginations can do to fill in those gaps, and even just giving a few throwaway lines like they do at the end. But what it reminded me of, and especially rewatching it in preparation for this talk, was like, it's like, this is also a lot like Pulse, the original Japanese Pulse.
Oh yeah.
Which is a very terrifying movie too. And it doesn't really explain anything. The American version was like, it's ghosts coming through the internet. Everybody run, you know? But in the Japanese version, it's maybe that, but it's also maybe a virus of the undead pouring into our world, using any avenue that they have to try to get here, and they're killing everyone. You know, the spillover is destroying all life on Earth.
Yeah,
and that movie doesn't really explain shit, and it becomes a global apocalypse. You know, basically by the end of it, and that makes it so unsettling, especially the ghost scenes in that movie. Some of them aren't as effective, but. And this movie reminds me of that, where it's like these creatures, because in Terrified, to be, you know, just to get back to the story a little bit, nobody can explain what's really happening to these people. The guy that we meet at the beginning has now been thrown in basically a mental asylum slash prison. And he gets interviewed by these, you know, paranormal investigators who want to know his story, and they want his permission to stay in his house. What he experienced, and they believe his story, even though he's like basically locked up, what he experienced was not, you know, a one-off event, and other people have experienced things, and they want the permission to go in there as this investigative team and stay in the three houses that are like have been affected so far that they know by the supernatural intrusion or whatever it is. It's almost like an evil virus or something that's happening in this,
and the way you're explaining it is a little cornier than what it is, like you know, the paranormal investigators going into a house, like that explanation just rings up like Ghostbusters or like, and this is not cheesy in any way. I mean, there's a couple of things,
and they don't even say paranormal, they're just like doctors, and he's kind of confused, like, why do you want to go stay in my house?
there's none of that like 70s movie like mumbo jumbo, like the paranormal and between dimensions, and there's not a lot of that at all, and no, which I very much appreciated.
3D, you know,
what was that?
It's not Amityville 3D.
Yeah, no, it's not. No. I mean, but that's the thing. So, I mean, one of the things that there's a couple of things that I really appreciated, and there's the scene at one point. They deal with the neighbor that was supposedly making the noise, right? They go back in time and they're like, what happened? And the scenes with that guy, like, so I have this pet peeve with like horror movies in particular. And it's like when there is like a ghostly figure or spectral or whatever monster sort of thing, and it just stands around, right? Or it shows up and it just like, and that's supposed to be creepy. Like it looks creepy. It's like, and that like, or there's like a force that nobody can see and everyone's freaked out by it. And like one of the biggest examples of this, which was like a huge moment in horror, was like the Blair Witch Project. Like I hated that movie so much, 'cause I'm like, just follow the fucking sun. Like seriously, the sun sets in the West, just follow the sun, you know what I mean? And you know, like there's this thing, and then at the end, you know, the camera drops. And so for me, like a huge pet peeve that I have in horror movies is when there's this like presence or force that hangs around and doesn't do anything, right? But it's scary, like it's creepy. And I'm like, no, unless it's actively going to do something to me or does something to somebody in the movie, why am I afraid of it? It's just standing there. Let's just hang out. I can watch TV and you go be spooky in the corner. But this movie was so effective, like with because there is sort of like a spectral force or like a thing, or like I don't even know what to call it. It looked to me like some gaunt like ghoul or zombie or anything, but in this movie it effectively stands around creepily where I was like, no, I don't want that in my house. Like I was like, no.
Like and it shows thing up on camera, you know, like that's kind of the cool thing about it, is like in this movie, you know, they aren't really spectral. They're not glowing Ghostbuster ghosts. They're like physical things
that
have physical weight.
Yeah.
And there's a great scene that I love, just the idea of it. Because a lot of the movie is like, it moves from like terrifying scene to terrifying scene. Like there's only a little bit of discussion and kind of in the middle and like the last third of the movie. Mm-hmm. The rest of it is a lot of just like tense suspense and horror, like what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
Type stuff. But there's a line where one of the guys is talking to the cop and he's like, you know, the light and the dark exist in the same time and place at the same time. And he shows him one side of the bed, seeing nothing. And then he goes to like the shadow side and pulls it up. And he's like, look, and then the feet of this ghoul kind of like scurry under the bed. And you're like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. You're just like,
that is scary.
It's so effective with that.
It's like always there, you know, and it's physical. Like, because it does like create, you know, it does grab people and breaks people's necks. And there's like horror that is physically happening. It's not just like, oh no, this ghost is really freaking me out. I'll never sleep.
You
know,
it's like, no, yeah.
Kill you.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, for
it's gonna come out of the wall and snap you in half.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. I mean. And, you know, on top of that, I mean, that those like the under the bed thing was so brilliant because it's like, yeah, that's the thing we're all afraid of. Right. Like that's like as a kid. And then it's like there's a character. He looks under the bed and you see the thing and you're like, oh, no. Like I'm like, no. I don't like that at all. Like that's very bad. Like, and you know, there's a thing and it goes, he's like, there's a wonderful shot where like the guy's trying to record it on video camera and the camera drops and he's like walking into the hall and you see him walking into the hall and on the camera viewfinder, like there, you see him walking into the hall on the camera. Just, I mean, there's some really nice, like little shots like that, but there's just so many like little bits in that neighbor's apartment where I was just like, I mean, it worked on me where something like that usually wouldn't, where something like hanging around or creepy looking, like whatever this director did. And I guess his name is Demian Rugna. That might be. Yeah. I believe that is his name. I may have mispronounced it, but like very effective. And the DP on this is amazing. Like just
The way the whole thing looks and the camera angles, it's really well directed and really well shot. The lighting of the whole thing is, there's nothing garish or that looks like, you know, a lot of, you know, low budget horror looks like a TV show. You know, this is just every little detail is really meticulously. And anytime you see any detail of any of these, you know, other dimensional creatures, they look spectacularly scary and like freaky. And the dead boy too, that whole bit with the dead boy is terrifying. And you know, I get chills just mentioning it. I can see it and I'm getting chills now just
like very disturbing. You know,
it's terrifying. I'm not even like a parent, but I can imagine as a parent it would be even more terrifying because you could also sort of feel what the mom's feeling. And that scene at the end where she shows up and she's like, I'll drive you to the hospital.
Yeah.
And like, she's like, I couldn't leave him in the ground.
Yeah. And, oh, and he's in the car. And you're just like,
the cop is great. He just like walks away, doesn't say a word, gets into his own car and just peels out. Like,
well, oh my God. So, I mean, that it's interesting that you mentioned like not being a parent because I am a parent, but my kid is a teenager now. And when I was younger and when she was first born, I had to sort of like step away from, I mean, I've liked horror like, you know, since my teens on. When I was younger, I was a little bit of a fraidy cat. But, you know, once I started getting into horror through like Night of the Living Dead and Texas Chainsaw and stuff like that, I just was like, okay, here we go. You know what I mean? Something clicked inside of me when I was a late teen or early 20s where I was like, oh, I like this sort of thing. But when my daughter was born, I had to pull back from horror, specifically anything having to do with like little kids or children. So like the scene with the kid and the whole thing with the kid is probably something that would have been so much more uncomfortable for me when I was younger and when my daughter was younger. And watching it now that she's a teenager, I mean, I can have that sort of like separation, but still it's just like, what the hell? Like when, and I had seen the little clip that you sent me and I stopped it right away because it had to deal with that, the little boy like turning up dead in his parents' apartment. And you're just like, yeah. Like it, just the whole idea of it is just horrifying. And the other great thing that I really needed to mention in this conversation is the characters, right? I love how everyone's older. I love how there's like no teenagers going to investigate. Like there's no, they're older people. They're older than, you know, they might be considered in some culture, like senior citizens, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they are the sort of quote unquote, not cheesy paranormal investigators. And I loved, absolutely 100%, 1000% loved the cop. Like loved the cop, because one of my biggest pet peeves in horror movies or action movies or whatever. Well, first of all, he's doing the whole Danny Glover, I'm too old for this shit, Lethal Weapon, on the verge of retirement. Like he's like, I'm ready to be done with, you know, he's like, why did this drop into my lap? You know, but I love it when people in movies act like people would in real life. You know what I mean? He's a cop. He's seen some stuff, but even for him, he's like, no. This is a bit, like, this is a bridge too far. And not only him, but the little bits that you see of the other cops that are investigating, right? They are like, can we go outside now? Like, literally one of them says, like, can we leave now? like not in a weird comedic way, just in a very matter of fact, like, do we have to be in this house anymore? And it's just great. It's so great, right?
Yeah, it is. I love that too. I mean, I hate that trend of American horror that hasn't stopped since like the 80s, where it's young kids.
Yeah, in peril, yeah.
Teenagers in peril kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just because like we're all teenagers for a short period of time, but after that, it's a little bit harder to relate to.
Sure.
And teenagers are scared of more things.
Sure.
When it's older people who are like really like experienced and they're terrified, like that makes it feel more real.
Yeah.
And the cop is like kind of an audience surrogate for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he reacts the way we are when he's like, don't turn that light off again.
Yeah.
Like the one time the guy turned off the light and something happens and he's like, don't, and that's like the only laugh in the whole damn film too, is because we recognize, I'm with that cop. Cause he's like, I'm 2 months from retirement or whatever he says, you know, like he's going to be on leave. Cause he has a physical condition. He has a bad heart. And, this is a lot for him.
Yeah.
Because one of the houses affected by the supernatural force is the house of his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
And her son has come back from the dead somehow.
Yeah.
They never say whether she dug him up or whether he came there, but we see his muddy footprints from the grave all over outside and all around the doorways and window. It's
and super going creepy. Up the walls too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is weird, where I was like, what, how does that work?
Yeah, like, you never see one of those like spider crawls or anything. In
yeah,
movie.
No.
It's not kind of movie.
Yeah. Know? It's not cheesy like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Not at all. It's all really kind of implied so that when the horror actually really starts coming for people, it becomes very visceral and you're like scared. Because he's kind of like where the name of the movie comes from, because his friend Hanno, who's one of the investigators, is like, how are you feeling? How are you doing? He's like, I'm terrified. What do you think? What's happening? You know, I'm terrified.
Yeah.
He's great. Like he becomes the heart of the film. And it's funny because he isn't in the first act of the movie at all.
Yeah.
Like, he's not even. And then he shows up and then we're like, okay, this guy's like, I'm with this guy because I have no idea what the fuck is going on. It's scary as hell.
Yeah.
And he's reacting exactly that way in every scene. He's like, oh my God, stop. No.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, that to me, that was very like that character. I just fell in love with like right away because I was just like, oh, he's not some hard nosed. Like in an America thing, it would be like, I've seen lots of crap and I've never seen anything like he. He's like, so like part of the plot is like, there's these investigators, like we said, and one of them is, what was his name again? Hanno? Was that?
Hanno is the older guy.
Yeah. He's kind of the first one that we're kind of introduced to. Right. And he is called into this scene And it's great because it's already like happened. And to your point, it's like, we don't know. I mean, my assumption was that the kid like dug out and walked home and she opened the door and it was like, oh, or maybe she woke up in the middle of the night or in the morning and the kid was sitting there in the kitchen. You know what I mean? I never made the jump that she may have helped him get out or anything. But what's great about it is that like, it's almost like an episode of Law and Order, right? Like where you walk into like the middle of the crime scene and the murder has already happened. But in this, it's like, whatever the director did to establish a sense of like, this is messed up, because like you walk into a thing and you feel like the environment is like very serious. And the cop says to his friend Hanno, like, hey, can you come and look at this? Because, you know, I don't know. And then you see what it is and you're just like, oh man. And then, you know, all the things that they kind of discuss, like, hey, did she go get him out of the grave? Like, have we, you know, and then he looks at the little boy's fingers and he's like, no, this little boy, look it, he dug himself. And it's just like, it's just so treated so well, right? Like so seriously, there's no bits of like real big humor. There's nothing like, you know, I just loved it. I loved that scene. I loved that bit because I was just like, oh, we're not treating this lightly. Like this is a real, they're treating this like it's a real thing. Right.
Yeah. And the cop himself seems to be like having almost a nervous breakdown about it because it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful too. Like in a weird occult sort of creepy, you know, like Joel Peter Witkin photography kind of way, like this kid just sitting there with a glass of milk in his dead hand and a bowl of, you know, whatever it is, cereal or cookies or whatever he's got there.
Yeah.
Like the mom gave it to him, like, okay, welcome home, son. You're just, you don't see any of that, but just the way it's set up is telling you this like weird, creepy story and it's terrifying. And that scene is like a masterpiece. I think that is super effective. And it kind of, you know, that's I will say that is the one sort of thing about the film is that's a hard scene to top in terms of the creepiness of it. And they do kind of get to that in the climax where the kid is kind of, he's kind of running around in the house now and we don't even know where he is. And we don't see him in any CGI dumbness.
No, it's all
like we just know the idea of this kid back from the grave and we know he's not around anywhere we can see, we know he's somewhere, and that's just terrifying, you know. That scene at the end where the cop is trying, he's trying to end it all, you know, and he pushes open the kid's door. Oh my god, that's one of the best jump scares in the movie. There's a couple of good ones that get me every time I've watched it.
That's so great. I mean, I just like The thing that I really loved about like all the characters and the cop and the settings and stuff is that there was, I mean, it's a little bit like I mentioned before. First of all, like all the characters are older, right? So like you said, they have experience in this. Like Hanno is just like, he walks in and he's investigating this corpse thing. And he's like, it's all matter of fact to him. He's just like, blah, 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 blah. This is what we should do. You should, you know, get the wife, the mother tranquilized. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and it's like, nobody thought of that before. Like, you know, but everyone's like in this.
We need injectable Valium.
Exactly. And then at one point, like it's so weird because it's like, right, like they don't delve into it too much. But if you're kind of like a smart viewer, you're looking at this and you're like, what do you do now? Like what? And they're like, well, we got to put him back in the grave. You know what I mean? Like we got to we have to put like cement on top of it because we don't want him
to get a couple bags of cement.
And the look on the cop's face is like. The look on the cop's face is like, really? Like the fact that you're even talking about, like just like, because I mean, he's supposed to be dead, right? Like that's the thing. Like, what do you do? Like nobody's pulling out like a George Romero, just shoot him in the head. Or you know, I mean, it's the first time like anyone's really dealing with this, or at least the cop is. And so when the solutions start to come up, even as the cop, and like you said, he is the audience surrogate, because I'm like thinking, what do we do now? Like, what do we do with him? Like, do we just, and then they stick him in the cooler, because they're like, and he puts a plant on top of it.
Planter on top of it.
Yeah, because he's like, we don't want him getting out or whatever. And it's just like, and that could be played like so broadly and so comically, and it's not, because you're just like, I was in it. Like, I was in the situation. I was taking it seriously. And I was just like, holy cow. Like, what would you do? Right. Like, what would you wouldn't know. You would just be like, this person was dead, you know? And I don't know that I've seen lots of horror movies. Maybe you have, because you maybe have seen more than I have, but that deal with it in such like a, like, well, we can't just let him walk around. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then there's that little bit with his friend that comes by, right? Like, you see the kid get hit by a bus in the beginning of the movie, and there's a little kid that sees it. And the remarkable thing to me was like, nobody is scooting that kid away, because he's just like staring at the kind of like dead body. But then he comes back and he sees him and records it on the phone. And, you know, there's a great callback to that later in the movie, because there's a woman leaving messages on the phone for the mom, and it's like, my son says he saw something. Then next message is like, my son recorded something, and they're doing something with your son's body, and I don't know what's going on. Like, it just escalates in a really nice but subtle way, right?
Yeah, it's super subtle, and that's why it works, because it doesn't make a big deal about, like I was saying before, you know, about like the character's backstory and establishing them in the everyday life. It's you're thrown into the event, and you have to pick up things just like they do as they're going along, because it's the movie's not going to stop and like take you by the hand and like, oh, don't worry, they're going to go visit the priest and he's going to tell them all about demons and you know. There's none of those pat sort of simple explanations. So that's what I think works about, is like, it's very existential. Like, you're just there with these people experiencing this event, almost like it's not a documentary, because it's more stylized, but it's almost like you're getting a reenactment of this thing that really happened, because the people are serious. There is no goofing around. There is no broad humor. There is no like aside jokes or, you know, and it's not cutting to like some, you know, the next flashy location or anything. It's like you can't escape this situation that you're in.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, so, and those little details, like the kid, and then what the kid, you know, the kid leaves his notebook and his bag because he's terrified.
Yeah.
Again, the title of the film.
Yeah.
And that what he recorded coming back is, it's all like very cool in that way. Like that's what I like about it. Cause the first time I watched it, I was like, yeah, we don't really, besides the cop who comes in like a third of the way, like there's not like a big plot or big story that like I was still grasping for the typical supernatural story that we've seen so many times where there's a solution, you know? Or they figure it out and everything's going to be okay. Yeah. This leaves you on such a tense, you know, like you don't even know what the hell happened. You just hear like what happened to the cop character in conversation in sort of an end epilogue scene. You know? You don't even know.
Yeah.
Until then. And that's also like very jarring. And you kind of like, oh, wow, maybe there's going to be a part two. And like, I was hoping that the first time I watched this, like, oh man, I wonder what's going to happen, you know, like is this, but it kind of leaves you there in a way that is, I think for some audiences would be unsatisfying, but if you like horror and you like something really interesting and you want to get scared, I mean, like put this on in a dark, you know, room at night and watch this and you're going to get freaked out.
Yeah.
Because there's not going to be this kind of satisfying, like, oh, that was okay. You know, like now I can go to sleep and
yeah.
No, this movie will give you nightmares. I mean, my friend who I introduced it to, he's like, because his son likes scary movies. He's like, no, it's too scary for you, dude.
I mean, I think like it's funny because like you mentioned that there's probably a certain audience that might be unsatisfied with certain things. And for me, it's very much like, no, this is what I like. Like I like that makes it even scarier. The fact that it's not explained, the fact that there's no like concrete resolution, the fact that there's like stuff still like out there. Like I am very much like to me, it's like that the cop, like what, like, Like, how do you go on with your life, like, after that? Like, you know, like, for all the love, you know, we all love Poltergeist and stuff like that. But, you know, at the end, it's, like, a very sort of, like, how does that, and, you know, there's Poltergeist 2 and Poltergeist, whatever, you know. But
it's
how do you go
Hollywood
on?
Ending.
Yeah. And it's just sort of, like, with this, it's just, like, as a viewer, right? Like, it makes you sort of, like, think, what is going on? And then if this was going on, it would be terrifying. And the fact that nobody comes out and says, like, well, it's demons. Well, it's, you know, I mean, they mess around with, like, a microbiological infection from another dimension. Like, they kind of mention that, but it's never really solidly, like, this is actually what's happening. And what does that mean? So everything is, like, very mysterious and you're just kind of, like, left hanging. And it's very much an aspect of what I loved about this movie, because it felt like, in some ways, it felt kind of like ethereal to me, because I was just like, oh, wait. But at the same time, it's so grounded by that central cop character for me, because there's one point where, like, there's the researcher that the cop is, like, hangs out with in the sort of, like, the beginning of the inhabiting of the three houses, right? And
the Rosenstock guy.
Yeah. And he's not a native Spanish speaker, because I speak Spanish. No. So, and I was like, oh no, I like, and they mentioned that I don't know if they said he was from America or, and I don't know if the translation.
He had done investigations in America. In America and in Europe. And I thought he reminded me of an Italian actor, but I don't think it's him. He's just credited as George L. Lewis. But yeah, his Spanish was, yeah, he had a bad Spanish accent.
Well, yeah, he wasn't a native Spanish speaker to me, but, like, at the point where things start to turn, and even, you know, like, that researcher starts to go a little nutty, where he's just like, look, they're looking under the bed and he's, like, so happy about it. And the cop's like, dude, this is like nothing to be happy about. Like, it's just, it's just so good. And it's just so well done. The turns that this takes, you know, and there's
that scene with that guy too, where they're in the kitchen and there's kind of, like, poltergeist activity in the kitchen where, like, all the cutlery is, like, hanging from the ceiling.
So good.
And one of it stabs him on a cabinet.
Yeah.
And then they hear a slurping sound from inside the cabinet. And he's like, don't touch it. Look, you know, it's sucking.
Yeah.
It's sucking the blood. And you're like, oh my God, that's disgusting.
Yeah. And it's so great, because it's like, open up the cabinet, but you're like, don't open up the cabinet. I don't want to know what's in the cabinet. Like, really, can't we just pull out the knife and just run away? Like, it's like, what are we doing here? Like, it's just so well done. But the one thing that I mean, the creatures that you see are so kind of, like, well shot and well put together, and they've got those, like, little beady, like, glowing eyes. Like, there's a scene where the female investigator, who is, like, probably the most serious of the bunch, right? And she's like, she's looking in the hole, and she sees, like, almost, like, I don't know what it is, like a remnant of what the neighbor is or was or what's left over. And he's, like, in the hole, and he's like, and you see his hair and his eyes, and I'm just like, oh God, stop talking to him. Just plaster it up. Just plaster up the hole. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just.
Yeah. And it's a hole in the wall that looks like it goes into an entire, like, cavern.
Yeah.
Of, like, some weird, scary underworld, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I love that too, where it's like, that's just a crack in a wall. It would only be, like, you know, 8 inches thick at most.
Yeah.
But you look at it, it's just like this vast space of, like, you know, little fragments of wall, like broken wall for, like, you know, yards. And then there's this thing creeping and poking his head out. Oh
yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. It was just like crazy. But I mean, I have to say, like, all the to your point, like, the great thing about particularly the investigators, right? There's no, like you said, like, this movie is so good at developing character without really explaining everything, because, like, you've got, like, Hanno, right? And he's very matter of fact. He's seen some stuff. And then you've got the older woman who is very sort of, like, she seems kind of, like, reserved and a little stoic and a little bit, like, mind your own business.
She's
like,
more of an academic.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Like, he's seen her give lectures about some of her books.
Yeah.
She's kind of pitched as more of, like, a, a supernatural philosopher academic who's written books about, you know, supernatural phenomena.
Yeah.
And she was kind of like inexplicably drawn to the place. Like they literally, that's kind of a contrivance, but he's like, there, this can't be a coincidence that you're here. I've read your book, you know, and like,
I was a little confused.
This thing across the street.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, see, so I was a little confused because was she the doctor that the neighbor was calling and the doctor was like, this, we can't help you with this problem because she's busy or something. And then she shows up, or did she just come out of the blue to investigate? Cause my understanding was that she was the doctor that the neighbor was like begging, like when he was at work, which is another great thing. Like this guy's at work and he's trying to call this paranormal investigator to come and check out his apartment. And they're just like,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. I think you're actually right.
Okay.
Like, I didn't, rewatching it now, I kind of didn't make that connection again, but I think you're right. But it's still, this wasn't like a team of paranormal investigators to begin with. Is
exactly.
Kind of what I meant.
They're not
like,
the Ghostbusters.
She's drawn there by another reason because she was helping out Walter.
Exactly.
And then this guy is across the street with the dead kid.
Yeah.
And he just sees her out there and he recognizes her.
Yeah.
And that's how they end up working together.
Yeah.
Which is, that's where some of those first time jumps happen too, is at the very, you know, beginning of the setup where we kind of get into it and then it jumps back and then we go back, you know, forward again. But, I love that, her character too is like, she has a different outlook, you know, she's super unfazed, but also like dangerously curious and oblivious to like how dangerous these things are, you know, and she's just matter of fact about it, but because she's kind of academic and is thinking about it all theoretically until she actually gets into the, you know, into the trenches, as it were. She doesn't last too long. nobody really comes out that well in this movie.
I think this is very good, like, character building through acting, you know what I'm saying? Very good, like, development of character, because they're all really great in this movie. Like, everyone's great and you get it, right? Like, it's so funny because
you never feel like they're putting it on or like this is like showy type thing. Like,
exactly.
Everybody's treating it 100% serious, which makes you like very serious about it too, because you also trust them. It's the idea that they're these older folks too in this kind of like ridiculously horror movie situation.
Yeah,
they're treating it very seriously and you're like, oh my god, this is freaking serious. And
I like that
we don't have to hear about how they got up in the morning and put their clothes on and everything, you know, like there's too much of that stuff, I think, as filler, for more lazy writing where you decide like, oh, well, I got to give them a sense of this person, so let's have them doing something mundane.
Sure.
And this, you learn about everybody through trauma, you know, and through the most extreme situation. That's how you define the character. You don't really know anything about the cop, Funes. You don't really know shit about him except that he used to date the woman whose son came back from the dead.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. Where did
and he's got a heart condition.
Where did you rewatch your version? Because I actually signed up for Shudder for the first time to watch this because I just felt like, I should pay something for it. And it was on Amazon. I could have paid for it. But I don't know that my translation was great, because I think that in my translation, the cop, they said he didn't have a heart problem. They said he had a problem with like, what do you call it? Like coagulation of your blood or like.
Well, he says that. Yeah, he does say that.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think it's supposed to be a heart, because he says I'm having a heart attack.
Yeah. At one point. Well, so that's what I was wondering, because at one point, and that's another thing that I loved in this movie, because you never really see somebody like actually just like have a panic freak out in a movie, you know, where they're not yelling, and he has a physical reaction, which you find out is a heart attack. I thought he was just like having a panic attack, but he's like literally having a heart attack. And I was like, oh damn, like this thing scared him. It freaked him out so much that he was like, because my understanding was that he was maybe a bleeder or something like that. And that's why he was like, you know, I don't know if I should be around here, if I'm going to get hurt or something like that. But to your point, I mean, I don't know. Was he supposed to have a heart condition? Because he does have a heart attack in the middle of everything. And I just found that particular spot. Go ahead.
No, I'm speaking to that particular like moment in the climax where something is coming out of the wall.
Oh my God.
He drops to the floor and he's holding his
great
chest.
Great shot.
Yeah, and the camera pans over. Yeah. Oh my God. Like you don't see it from one angle, but then you look at it from the camera pans over and thing is crawling towards him.
So good.
And one hand is like spider fingers and one hand's normal. Oh.
Yeah. The camera move on that is
that?
The camera move on that is so great because he's on the ground and he's like clenched up and he's having his face is all red and the camera kind of like moves down and it's like, and then this thing so good.
Yeah. I got the sense that it knew that he had some condition and it was just trying to like, kill him with that, you know, like that was kind of what I took.
Oh, okay. For me, it was just like that.
I think it's both. I think he was reacting and actually having an event, but I think the Force or whatever it is, you know, it's not the Jedi Force, folks.
No,
it was like feeding off that because it gets closer and closer to him, and then he thinks it's gone, and then there's the great like reveal where it's like it's crawling over the counter right above him, and you're like,
yeah, it's so good. And the whole bit
did you watch it with the lights off?
Yeah, I did watch it with the lights off. My wife happened to be out and my daughter was upstairs doing homework, so I turned off all the lights in the living room and I watched it with all the lights off and I was just like, this is great. Like it was just great. And then it just escalates. And you know, to your point about the ending, like, yeah, it's kinda like you're kinda like left hanging a little bit, but it was so like, I mean, the final thing with, you know, the thing that happens like towards the camera or whatever, like I was like, okay, great. That was fine. Like this was great. And I mean, I'm just thankful for you recommending this to me because this is probably something that I would highly recommend to people like watch during October or on Halloween actually, because I really, it's weird because the Internet Movie Database, I looked it up, it only gets like 6.4 and I was like, what? Should be higher than that. I'm like, are you people crazy?
I think it should be too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that comes from people who are expecting, you know, the simple answers and, you know,
sure.
I mean, And more of like a linear like hero arc in their movie, you know, where it's like, well, here's the person and here's their conflict and they're going to resolve it over during the course of Act Two. Yeah. But they're going to have this bottom out at the end of Act Two and then they're going to win triumphantly in Act Three. And it's like, this isn't that movie.
Yeah, this is not that movie.
this is like a almost like a cold analysis of this paranormal event that, you know, ends up like claiming a lot of lives. And you know, there's that great moment too at the end where the female, the body of the female investigator Albrecht comes running out towards his car and she's like,
oh,
help us, we're still here.
Yeah, yeah.
We're being tortured or whatever it is.
That was another thing I did not expect to happen at all. Like when that happened, I was like, what? What is happening? Because I didn't expect, like, that's what's great about this movie. Like you don't expect it to get crazy. And then it has a tiny little crazy moment and you're like, what? Like, it's just like, because of the way that it's shot, it seems like low budge, you know what I mean? Low budget. And to a certain extent, it probably is. But like when the extreme freaky thing happens, like you said, when she comes running out of the house, I was just like, you know, I was like, step on the gas, you know what I mean? It's just like, what is happening? So yeah, really good stuff. I mean, really good stuff.
She just comes out of the shadows too. They don't even like, it's like a background element that just keeps getting bigger. And you're like, what the hell is that? And then you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. So good. So good. I mean, I love this. This was great. Thank you so much for recommending. And thank you so much for recommending it for our Halloween horror movie episodes, because I mean, I fell in love with this movie. I mean, maybe people will think I'm crazy, but this is definitely like my favorite horror movie that I've seen in a long, like new horror movie that I've seen in a long time. And it's probably something much like you, I'm going to revisit like again and again, like whenever this time of year, like rolls around.
Mine too. It's easily one of the best horror films of this new century. I think it's definitely up there for me.
Yeah.
It's very rewatchable. It's going to be evergreen, I think, in terms of like the scares in it.
For sure.
And great score. It's so well done for what its constraints are that you don't even notice the constraints because you're just in it the whole time.
Absolutely. I will see anything. Like I went through this director's like internet movie database. It seems like he directs movies like sporadically, like every couple 4 or 5 years or something. It looks like he's working on something in 2022. I will see anything that this guy does like in the future. Like I was so impressed. I was just like so impressed. And it's funny how you mentioned the nonlinear and the weird sort of structure of it. I mean, it really does fit into that sort of like post Tarantino sort of thing that we've all kind of that indie moviegoers have and fans have all fallen in love with, which is like it's going back and forth. It's not telling you what it's doing, and you very much have to figure it out on your own. But once you do, you're just sort of like, oh, this is not good. Like all that stuff with the neighbor in the beginning of the movie, so good. Like particularly in the workplace where he's like practically begging somebody to come help him. And they're like, yeah, I can't do it. Sorry. You know, we've got other appointments, or they're not doing it. And you could just feel it coming off of him, that frustration. And we've kind of probably all been there where we've been at work and there's something stressful going on in our lives, you know, and we're at the phone and we're just like, oh my God, I just need help. Like just perfect.
That's like you get, they develop that character is developed in like one scene of him at a desk.
Yep.
And the camera doesn't even move. It's just his performance, you know, and you're like, and you get, oh my God, this guy's on the edge.
Yeah.
This guy's on the brink of a nervous breakdown and what the hell's going on. And then we see what's going on and we're like, oh no shit.
Yeah. And it's so great because there's like two dudes like sitting behind him in the background in the office and they're kind of not reacting. And then one dude kind of starts reacting and it's just like, oh, it's so good. I just think like we talked about Maximum Overdrive for the episode before this. And one of the things that I said about Stephen King is that he's really good about, like, that movie's not that great, obviously, but Stephen King is really good at making something mundane or normal in your life like seem like just terrifying, right? And this movie is also very good at that, where it's just like, this is, like you said earlier, normal kind of suburban neighborhood, but now all bets are off. You know, hang on to your hats. We're fucked. What are we going to do? Like, it's just great. Yeah. It's just great.
Yeah.
It's just great. Thank you so much for recommending it. I very much appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad you dug it, man.
Oh, it's so great. It's so great. So, Phil Mucci, tell people again about yourself. Tell people again about the diabolic double. See, I always want to say diabolique. I always want to mispronounce it. Diabolic double feature. Let people know where they can find you on Twitter and Instagram and all that. Sell yourself, sir.
Yeah, well, you can pick up our books at ProfessorDarioBava.com. We're also having I'm not going to talk about that because this is going to go out later than now, but we're having a sale now.
Oh, okay.
I just messed that all up.
You missed the sale. Have one for like Halloween or something, maybe.
You can go to ProfessorDarioBava.com to pick up our books, and I'm at Phil Mucci on Twitter and Instagram, sometimes with a underscore between the Phil and the Mucci. There's a lot of good stuff. If you like horror movies, you will like our books.
I agree. So, I agree. Like I said, it gets the part-time fanboy stamp of approval. And hopefully this episode will be up before Son of Monsterpalooza in October. What date is Son of Monsterpalooza? Do you know off the top of your head?
Let's see. I think it's the 14th through the 16th.
Oh, okay,
of October.
Cool. So this will be up
just
before then.
I'm just going to double check. Yeah, it's Friday the 14th to Sunday the 16th.
Oh, couldn't have been Friday the 13th. But anyway.
No, it's Thursday the 13th this year in October.
Oh, boo. Anyway, people should go find you there and find your books. Hopefully I'll come and, you know, meet you in person, because I wanted to go to Monsterpalooza.
If you come in person, yeah, we'll have a great time.
It's
Fun. There's going to be like RoboCop people there. It's like,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's his name? Peter Weller.
Oh, really?
And his partner.
Nancy Allen, right? Is that her name?
Nancy Allen. She's going to be there. Yeah.
I think that's her name. I may have met. Sorry. But because today's this year is like the 30th anniversary or something or whatever of RoboCop. Right?
Yeah. I think they're doing 30. Like the comp now. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Monsterpalooza. But people should not go to Monsterpalooza for that. They should go and see you, Phil Mucci, Diabolic.
Purchase new cover by Robert Samlin for our next book.
Excellent.
We're gonna have a big like 6-foot banner of it. So
that's awesome.
I can't wait to unveil it. It's gorgeous. It's
really beautiful. Well, I can't wait to check this stuff out in person. Again, Diabolic double feature. Got it right that time. Phil Mucci, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for recommending Aterrado for me. I loved it.
My pleasure, brother.
Yeah. And and I will just sign off by saying this is something that you should watch during the month of October, possibly on Halloween. It is that good. It is that freaky. I loved it. This has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening. Check out the Diabolic double feature. Check out Aterrados. And thank you for listening. We will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
I'm doing part-time. I'm doing part-time.